and sing along. Yeah. Rapping so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Good evening, this is Sean P.
Big Group.
And we are the brothers.
Coming to you live from the Boogie Down Bronx.
With another episode of our podcast. And tonight's episode, we are recording on the later side, is Cops Are Us.
Yes, indeed.
And, the last couple weeks has been dominated by another news cycle. And always, you know, different things pop to the top. But for the last couple weeks, the story of Tyre Nichols has been the dominant story. A young man on his way home, violently stopped by police, dragged out of his car, beaten severely, and eventually died from his injuries. And then the police were, you know, the officers were rushed to, dressed through the situation, and eventually they were arrested, and that's kind of where the situation lies. So, Big Root, for our listeners, what are your initial thoughts on the Tyre Nichols situation?
Well, if you watch the video, it's very horrific, very hard to watch. Basically, being an unarmed man, defenseless, unarmed man, getting beaten half to death for what it seems no provocation. What was scary is that a lot of the times during the beating, they were making statements such as, you know, put your hands up and things like that, even though he was physically handcuffed and unable to put his hands up, they were trying to make it insinuate that he was still fighting back. You know, so it was just a very horrific thing to watch.
Agreed. It's funny you make that point because several people said they could not get through the video. Like they initially looked at the video, but they could not watch it to its completion. And I think to your point, that speaks to the intensity of it, the savageness of it. It was hard to watch because it was like literally they were beating this man, this young man, with almost a sense of joy and intensity. And I guess for normal people, it is hard to watch. Like, you don't want to see that. You made a point, though. Like you said, you basically said that, for no reason. And I think at one point, the dispatcher, when they reached out to him, said, "What's the charge?" And there was no reply. So when you connect the dots, there's the savage beating of an unarmed man, a non-threatening individual, which we've talked about in the past. We talked about that one of the problems with policing in America, policing in Black America, right, is how at the moment of either the moment of death or the moment of assault or whatever you want to call it, the person being assaulted is not an immediate threat. It's not that they're shooting and you're shooting back. It's not that they're harming somebody and you have to stop them. They're basically subdued, right? And you've made the point that they're saying, raise your hands or hold your hands up when he's already handcuffed or whatever the case may be. And I think that draws the inference. Why are they doing that? Like, why would you tell somebody to raise their hands when you know their hands are restrained?
Because they had body cams on and they knew that if people are watching the body cams or hearing the audio, they wanted to make it seem that he was resisting so that when they were striking him, it looked like it was justified. So they already had their stories kind of in place.
Okay. Starting with that premise, like you said, that the cover-up was in place while the incident was going on that needed to be covered up, right? It goes back to, again, what the dispatcher said. What was the charge, right? What did he do? And I think the reason why that's a good point to really start the focus of our episode is the fact that, okay, sometimes criminals do heinous things, monstrous things, and we understand that police officers are regular people, right? And sometimes you see something so bad that, yes, you get emotionally charged and you react on a very basic level, a very animalistic level. Yet, in this case, when the dispatcher asks, "What was the charge?" there was no reply because there was no charge. They didn't even know what he did. He didn't do anything, yet they were so charged up to beat him. And I think that's a very key point, because how can you be so animated, so angry, so intensified against somebody, but you don't know what they did?
Exactly. It's like he was singled out. He was targeted. We're going to get this guy here with no real justification.
Right, but the intensity, right? Because a lot of time you are chasing somebody, you are, you know, you witness something again that's just so intense that your reaction matches the level of what you witnessed. And in this case, that wasn't the case. It was, okay, there was a stop, and then basically assault on Tyree Nichols happened. He eventually ran, I imagine, in fear of his life, and then that exacerbated the situation. But again, going back to the dispatcher, what was the charge?
Yeah, and what you're saying brings to light, there was no charge. It was basically, we stopping him because we feel like stopping him, and, you know, we're going to take this brother out.
Basically, I mean, you know, people might draw different conclusions, but I think right now that's the only real conclusion to draw, because again, you know, there was no charge, right? There was no incident. There was no precipitating event. It was just literally he was stopped, random traffic stop, so to speak, and somehow these officers came in hot and ready. So the reason for our episode tonight, Cops R Us, is there's been a lot of talk about reimagining policing in America. And if you go back to the summer of 2020, some people called for abolishing the police, which a lot of people write off in the hand, said that's not realistic. We live in a modern world. Crime is a part of our society, and police officers are supposed to deal with crime. But what does reimagining or police reform look like? Like, in other words, okay, what if we did need to reform the police, change the nature of policing America? What would that look like?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of different, I guess, depending on what angle you want to take, there's a lot of different perspectives you can come from. You can have a police force that is people from the community that's policing for the community. So basically, you have to live where you serve. That could be something that could help to implement some change into the way that police interact with the residents. If you live with us and you're among us every day, then you kind of know how we think and, you know, what's going on, as opposed to I live 80 miles upstate in some suburb. I just come down for my 8-hour shift and go back home.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists are on another planet. And me, I'm the last MC still standing.
Exactly. And that's a really good point. I think there were different periods of time where that was an initiative. You had to live within the city limits, you had to live within a certain area in relation to the area you're going to work. So I think to your point, that covered that, right? You had to be part of the community that you were going to police. I guess one of the problems with that approach was that there was loopholes that people took using fake addresses and such, and just it didn't seem to fully manifest. Because, I mean, again, if that's the case, then we would hope to see some kind of a difference. So that is one approach, right? If you live within the community, or you need to live within the community to police it. What else? Or before you answer, I know that I had a conversation recently and we were talking about private security, right? Some businesses employ their own level of policing, which is they pay people to protect their premises and do a function similar to police. And the problem with that, as far as policing, is security officers don't have policing powers. And a lot of people understand that policing powers is part of the government. So it's kind of hard to wrestle that away. Even if you have private security, they can only protect your property, but then they still have to call the authorities as far as policing any type of crime.
Yeah, well, actually, the area where I work at, which is a business district, in the Bronx, they have their own private security. They hired some private security, and that's just basically to protect their property, their interests. They obviously, like you said, they're not doing police work. They just to make sure that for that particular business, that there's no theft, there's no hostile, you know, customers coming in and things like those situations they can handle. Obviously, they're not policing the street for crime and other instances of, you know, people doing bad. They're just trying to make sure that that business doesn't lose money. So I think it does have its place in the economic workplace, but is it going to make a difference in the community? I don't think so.
True, true. One of the things I do like about that approach, Joe, is that those security officers are beholden to the people that they work for. And I think taking that understanding, that is supposed to be the case with police officers, right? I know that some people in the past have told police officers, you work for me, right? And, you know, that could be meant in many different ways, but that's a technical truth. I'm a taxpayer, and your salary is paid from my taxes, so technically you work for me. But because there is a division between the police department and the communities that they police, a lot of time understanding is not there. I don't work for you. And it's almost kind of this disconnected relationship where I can treat you any way I want, but the reality is you do work for me, or at least you're supposed to work in supporting me, right? I'm supposed to be protected by the police unless I'm committing a crime. And too many times, that's not the case.
That's true, but I think the problem with that theory, that when they say, though, you know, you work for the people, is that most of the areas where the police are seen and where a lot of these abuses happen are in lower income areas where they probably aren't paying taxes or not the same level of taxes as other parts of the community. And they seem that that's where the crime is. So those citizens, in a sense, aren't paying for their protection.
That's true. I mean, that's a valid point. But I think the understanding is just the nature and the relationship of police officers and departments to the environments that they police, right? Because I think in some cases, police officers, as you said, they don't live in a neighborhood. They live 80 miles away, wherever they actually reside. And then they look at the area they police almost as enemy ground, right? So that kind of defines the relationship. You know, I got to stop those people. I got to find those people. And it's a different relationship than, like you said, we started out, if you live in a community and you know these people because you're one of these people. So I think it starts with the understanding of the relationship between the police and the areas they're policing, right? If they're others, if they're foreigners, then your relationship is going to be different.
No, I agree with you. That's true.
So with the premise of Cops Are Us, and again, because of the Tyre Nichols situation, and I think one of the reasons why the conversation shifted a bit is usually, most times in these cases, it's a white police officer and a black individual citizen that's the victim of the brutality. So usually racism jumps right to the front of the conversation, and that's what the conversation is about, right? The white officer beat up on the black citizen. In this particular case of Tyre Nichols, there were five black officers, and Tyre Nichols was also black. So in some sense, it removed the racial aspect of it. Not totally, of course, but in some sense. And then that's what made people question, what is it about policing that leads to the same results, right? Because it doesn't seem to matter the color of the officer. It definitely seems to matter the color of the alleged criminal or the victim of the abuse, because it always tends to be an African-American individual or a person of color, not just African-Americans. But so it does seem that there's a racial aspect of it, but in the Tyre Nichols case, it made it a little murky because it wasn't a white officer. It was five black officers that did the beating.
No, it's true. It's alarming, like you said. It always seems that the person that the crime is perpetrated against or the alleged victim is always a person of color. And again, we're not calling for someone to go out and victimize Caucasian people. We're just simply stating that it always seems that a person of color seems to always be the person that is having their rights infringed upon.
No, exactly. And ironically, not to get into this other conversation, that was the whole point of the Black Lives Matter movement, that disproportionately African Americans and people of color are the victims of police abuses and atrocities and brutality, which precludes the fact that Black lives don't matter, right? That was kind of the whole point when everyone said, oh, every life matters. Yeah, but every life is not being treated the same way. Every life is not being attacked the same way. Lives of people of color are being attacked disproportionately, negatively, harshly, right? So, I mean, that's the point. And this very tragic incident shows that you get five police officers and they'll beat a black individual to death.
Tired of the same rap songs, every new hit should sing along. Rappers so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art form. I'm tired of the same rap songs.
Yeah, so it seems like no matter who the officers are, the same results are going on. I mean, the only thing that seemed different in this case than the other cases that we've seen is the swift justice that was served.
Very true, very true. Which is funny because then that led to the fact, okay, when it's five black officers, look how fast they're kind of brought to justice, so to speak. So even then, the specter of racism kind of lingered over, right? So, I mean, this is the dynamics that we face right now in 2023, right? So anyone who thinks that the problem is behind us is very mistaken. But the point of today's episode, Cops Are Us, was trying to find methodologies or ideas to reform police, right? Because I almost forgot this. A few years back, the major reform initiative was to get cameras on police officers because they didn't have body cams. They had dash cams. There was cameras on the cars. There wasn't cameras on the actual officers. And eventually, through a lot of legislation, a lot of debates, there was cameras put on police officers by law. And the results have been very similar to prior to the cameras being there. I don't know the exact data, the exact stats, but many people felt that police would be reformed by having cameras on, monitoring what they do. And the evidence shows that that has not led to significant reforms.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not totally surprised by that because even with the advancement of so many different street cameras and public citizens taking video with their cell phones, cops, when they seem to be caught doing certain things, still find a way to justify their actions.
No, that's a great, but my point was that one of the major initiatives of the reform was for officers to have cameras on, feeling that that was going to hold them more accountable. And as much pushback as they did, again, it was kind of like, no, we need to do this. This is to reform policing in America to eliminate some of the problems we have and whatever. So the reality is that the cameras have been, right? I get your rationale for thinking it wasn't going to make a difference, but the initiative was to do that. And the initiative was largely successful in that many police departments signed on and or had to sign on, and their officers are now supposed to wear body cameras. Yet the same type of situations happen. So the reason why I bring it up is that clearly the cameras weren't the successful reform initiative that people thought they would be. That's why we're thinking of other initiatives. We're saying, okay, cameras are put on officers, body cams, but the abuses are still happening. So what else can we try?
No, well, first thing, like you said, is true. The cameras were put there, but then the evidence that you get from the cameras has to be used in a way to hold the officers accountable. If every time that they're caught on camera doing something that's wrong and the person is injured or killed, you know, a lot of times they weren't being held accountable. So you could have the evidence, but if there's no teeth in the, you know, in the legislature to hold them accountable, then they feel that, you know, we could be on video doing whatever. We're not going to get in trouble. Now, this circumstance, they were quickly fired, arrested, and, you know, they're facing charges. But that has not been the case, you know, in the past.
Okay. So you're saying basically the cameras wasn't fully implemented. In other words, the evidence from the cameras wasn't used in a effective way, so that it made the cameras ineffective.
Exactly.
Okay. That being said, and I can definitely agree with your point, and hopefully our listeners understand the point you're making as well, we can move beyond it, right? We can say, okay, that was initiative, let's say initiative one, let's just say, right? Initiative one has not had the impact we would have liked. So now the point of episode tonight of Cops Are Us is, let's just say initiative two. Maybe there are other initiatives that we're not mentioning, but we're just saying body cameras at one point was the big push. And I'm only saying it because there was so much pushback to it. It wasn't like it was easy to do, but eventually it worked. It was implemented, and it hasn't had the effect we want. So we're saying a second initiative that we'd like to put out would be what?
I would say more community policing, in the sense that officers walking a beat as opposed to always being in the car, getting up, having personal relationships maybe with your community as opposed to just dropping by and looking to see who's doing what.
Okay. So basically officers being more integrated into the life of the community.
Yeah. So basically, if I'm working on a certain block, whatever, I know that Officer Johnson normally covers this area. So if something's going on that doesn't look right, I can say, Officer Johnson, can you check this out? Although I saw X, Y, and Z, as opposed to, you know, not being able to approach the police officer. Because number one, I think it's a situation now where a lot of us are scared to even approach a police officer. You might go to go tell them that something is going on and they put you in custody thinking that you're a perpetrator.
Good point. And I definitely like the point. I mean, that is the point of tonight's episode. I think one extension I had to that, because we're talking about community policing, and that's been old school initiative, and it's been revisited in certain ways. Like I said, officers walking the beat, so to speak, knowing the communities that they're responsible for, communities knowing the officers that are responsible for them, so having that relationship. But I think an added step that could be taken is if police officers worked for the community, in other words, say the community was responsible for paying their salaries, right? Not the mayor, not some external entity, right? But the community. You work for us. Your job is to keep us safe, but we're also, quote unquote, your bosses. Because as we said before, there are places where people have that understanding, right? We pay your salaries and you support us. And we know that in certain communities, that's not the understanding. And for certain police officers, that's not the understanding either. I don't work for you, right? You're the enemy. So I guess Cops Are Us is, how do we bridge that divide where police officers work in the community? They're part of the community. And I think that was what you were saying, right? If they're walking the beat, if they're waving every day, if they on a first name basis with the people that they're policing, it brings them closer. And I think to add to your point, if those people were responsible for paying those officers, it brings them even closer. That could be wrong. I'm not saying that that's definitely true. I'm just saying that, you know, we tend to associate a lot of our life, our livelihood, with who pays us.
What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to. I demand it. All the real artists on another planet, and me, I'm the last MC still standing.
So again, you know, all the initiatives of officers being a part of the community, and even the community paying for the officers, maybe that would change the relationship of police and the areas they police that they're responsible for.
It might, because you think about it, in our community, we actually have that. The officers that work in our public safety, I know they're not full police officers where they work for New York State or New York City, but they work for our community, and technically we do pay their salary.
Exactly. And we have a different relationship with them. I think, honestly, most people that live in our community, when you see an officer from our community, you don't have the same apprehension or suspicion right? Because you know they work for you. You know that they're supposed to be here. They're keeping you safe, right? So you have almost the right relationship that you should have with a police department. And I think lost with other police departments, with the police department, right? We do tend to see them as other. And I think part of the police reform movement has to be to remove the other, right? We shouldn't see police as other, right? We should see them as the governing, defending body they're supposed to be. That we are not supposed to be scared of police officers.
It's true. I think in our community, they're approachable and they're not seen as someone that's in your community to victimize you. And I think in the rest of the city, that is the case. People see them as like the controlling or occupying force as opposed to somebody you go to for help.
Exactly. So, I mean, some of the ideas are really us trying to connect with the, you know, to heal the divide, basically. Don't know if it'll work, but that's kind of the goal. Can we heal the divide? Can we get police officers to be part of the community, be integrated, right? And one of the problems could be mayoral control, maybe because they work for the mayor and they're a separate force and they have a separate responsibilities. They're working at the community instead of working in the community. I mean, it's all just semantics, but you get the point, right? If we pay them and they're part of us, maybe they would have more respect for us and we'd have more of a connection with them. As opposed to, like you said, they're paid and work for somebody else and then they show up here.
Yeah, I think you're definitely making very good points. I think another point of, not say contention, but is that good officers never seem to see anything wrong with bad officers. Like, no, they don't call each other out. There should be some type of maybe a hotline or some type of service where if somebody is doing the wrong thing and you want to report them to have them investigated, you can do that without fear of reprisal. Because like in most workplaces, they have a hotline where you can call HR. If you think there's something going on that shouldn't be going on in the company, you call them. They don't have your name. They don't expose you, but they're able to investigate that situation. I think maybe they need something like that for police officers where good officers or officers who know that something is corrupt or something is wrong can report it without making themselves targets.
Exactly. Exactly. Good point. That's a very good point. And I think the main thing, again, tonight's episode for our listeners and viewers is cops are us. And I think that's the thing. Too many times in our country, in our society, we have a division. It's us and them, us versus them. And we need to have much more of us and them, us together, us are them, right? Because at the end of the day, police officers do need to be part of the community that they police, right? We're not enemies. We're not a foreign country. We're not others, right? Most of us are going about our lives. I mean, we've had conversations about guns in America. Most Americans don't have guns because they trust the police force to protect them. Now, if that same force then becomes a threat to them, that makes them want to question everything about society and safety, right? Because I'm not even protecting myself because I'm trusting you to protect me. And you're the threat to me or one of the threats to me. So how can I feel safe with you? How can I feel safe in society if my protector is my offender?
Yeah, no, you're totally right. The one that's supposed to protect me is the one that's abusing me. So I have no recourse.
Exactly. And again, we don't know why this is happening, but we do believe, at least, you know, Big Rupa and I do believe that the disconnect, the view and the understanding or the belief that police are one entity and community is another entity is a problem, as opposed to we're part of the community. We're integrating the community. You know, like Big Rupa said, if you're walking around and your beat is your beat and they know you, you know them, that may change the relationship. if you know that they're the ones paying you, right? Because many people don't beat up their boss. Let's just be honest, right? Some people do, but most people don't.
Sorry, you turned to a robot voice.
No, that's okay. Yeah, we're having some internet issues. But I was simply saying most people don't attack their employer. They have a certain level of respect and a certain relationship with the employer. So that's something that maybe we could replicate where police officers understand the community is their employer. The community is there for them, and they need to be there for the community.
Yeah, I think that would be a great place to strive for.
Okay. So, big group, we always leave our listeners with a call to action. Today's episode, Cops Are Us, and we talked about some of the different police reforms that, you know, maybe our society, our communities could consider. But what's a direct call to action for our listeners?
I think personally, when you have an interaction with an officer, to actually talk to him. Because I know me personally, I usually don't like to talk to no cops unless I needed some type of assistance. But maybe if you see him in a bodega, you see him in a restaurant, you see him in, you know, just walking in the street or whatever, you can say what's up, say hello, and maybe talk to him, you know, engage with them, see if they really are, you know, they can see that we're real people. We're not just people to control or people who are criminals who haven't committed a crime yet. You know, by interacting with them, they would start to treat us as people since we have a little bit of a relationship with them by talking to them.
That's a really good approach, really good call to action. It's very doable. It can be applied, you know, right away. So I think that's a good one for our listeners. I think ironically, that's something I tend to do, but probably just more natural. Like, I mean, I'm like that with anybody. If I get on the bus, you know, I'll say good morning. What's up to the bus driver? If I see an officer, I'll say good morning. Like, if they're, you know, front of the building, or if they happen to be standing on a block corner I'm walking by, you know, I'll wave at them. But I'm not going on my way the way you're kind of saying to engage them. I think just almost naturally, there's no reason not to. So I think, you know, like you said, making it an active step to connect with them is a good approach. I think my call to action, as the conversation was going, you know, different things went through my head. I think maybe it really is to think about life without police, right? And maybe if we think about life without police, then we can envision the type of life we want to have with police. So I think, again, it's maybe giving thought to police reform from our point of view, right? We know that we want to see more accountability and other changes in the police force, but what does that look like from our point of view, right? And like you said, engage with them more on one hand and, you know, just to understand the role that we do want police officers to play in our day-to-day lives, or just, you know, to be in our community. I think if we can imagine what we want them to do and how we want them to be, maybe we can take steps to get to that point.
I agree. That's well said.
No, same with you. I mean, I think it does start with engagement. So I think, again, that's probably the best call to action, to start to engage with police officers. You know, like you said, a lot of times people don't want to talk to them, so they avoid them. And that creates a divide, or it continues to divide. So I think what you're saying is let's start to bridge the divide. So I think that's a great approach.
Yeah, basically breaking the ice. And they see them as, you know, see us as people. We see them as people, as opposed to the relationship the way it's formed right now.
Exactly. Well, again, definitely a very big topic, a lot to consider. Hopefully our listeners have some takeaways. And again, you know, today's episode, Cops Are Us. I'm Sean P.
I'm Big Root.
And we are the brothers.
Peace out.
I'm tired of the same rap songs. Every new hit sing along. Rap is so boring, now correct me if I'm wrong. It's like they took the art out the art form. What's going on, man? I don't understand it. I want something good to listen to, I demand it. All the real artists on another planet, and me, I'm the last MC still standing.